Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Well, that wasn't an irritating thing to do.
Yeah.
Hello. God. The Driver. That's what we're doing this week on the podcast. Hello, I'm Richard. With me to talk about it is Abby.
Hello.
Jamie.
Hello.
Fine. And Anthony.
Hello.
So, guys, I picked the film this week, so therefore. For once, I will give the credits so that you know, because it's easy to confuse this with other things. Not Drive with Ryan Gosling, not that. Although at the start of the film is pretty much identical. This film is called The Driver from 1978. It was directed and written by Walter Hill. It stars Ryan O'Neill, Bruce Dern, Isabella Ajani, Ronnie Blakely, Matt Clark, and more people. You know, the credits keep going, but I won't bother. The film is about a driver and a man trying to stop the driver. None of the characters have names in this. They're all just the driver, the detective, that bloke with the glasses. One of them's listed as teeth, fingers, red plainclothesman is one of the high-up credits. So yeah, there are no names. There are no names apart from the actors' names. So yeah, I guess I picked the film because I like the 70s. They just fucking made some good films, guys.
They
They
did.
made far more good films than they made bad. There's a few stinkers there, but most of the 70s films are brilliant. When men were men and women knew their place as hussies in movies with limited speaking roles. No, like genuinely. The 70s have loads of great thrillers, and I hadn't seen this one. I like some Bruce Dern, and that was enough. So that's my reason. Jamie, I know you're a big fan of Bruce Dern. So were you excited about some Dernage?
Dernage. That's a great word. Yes, and also I wasn't disappointed. He's very Bruce Dernie in this movie.
He does a lot of. His lips stay very close together. They make a little puckering
Yeah,
cat's anus.
he does a lot of his sort of quiet, I don't know how you would describe it, quiet, vaguely patronizing talking that he does
Yeah.
in a lot of different films. He
He
has a
does
very
indeed.
specific delivery that apparently the director, Walter Hill, wanted. Like, that's, he wasn't the first choice for the role, but like, he, I guess it thought, well, if I can't have my first choice, I may as well just have Bruce Dern, because that's my fallback for everything.
He's sufficiently irritating, and that's what I want. I want him to shine, like, because everyone in this film is basically an asshole. So, I believe that was one of your comments to me once you'd watched it off podcast, Abby, is everyone's an asshole.
Yeah, it's basically the first thing I said. They're horrible to each other. The driver himself may or may not be racist. I couldn't quite tell what his problem was, really, but he had one.
Yes, I that was something I thought, and it never really gets clarified. So the whole time I was just thinking, is it because the guy looks vaguely of foreign descent?
I didn't pick up on that. I just thought it was his general attitude, which could cause problems down the line because clearly, like the driver, a very meticulous, MO, and like and he does say like he's never working with the people from the beginning again because they were about like 10 seconds late or whatever. So I just feel like that he's clearly had past experiences with people with the same kind of attitude as that guy,
He
which
doesn't
to be
like
fair,
chances.
yeah, which to be fair, I you know it fair enough because he does go around shooting everyone.
Yeah, he does. He feels like he's got a stick up his butt, the driver. But I think part of his agitation is coming from the fact he's trying to be coaxed to work with less professional people, and he doesn't want to, and that that jeopardizes things, as well as him not wearing any disguise while he's driving, because, you know, that, anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We're talking about the film before I've asked you, what were you thinking? So, Ante, I'll ask you, before you'd watched The Driver, what were you expecting from it?
Ambiguous, because, first of all, it did look like a cool 70s film, which I'm totally on board with, and you're right, like, the 70s just did produce just really cool looking, especially, like, the cinematography. I don't know what it was, but, like, just cinematography peaked in the 70s. And this one seemed to just look the part.
Fashion was at an all-time low.
Yeah.
But everything, visuals, flair and cars and excitement and guns and everything else was at a high.
Yeah. So I was hoping it was going to be that film, but it did also remind me of the film Drive, which I personally didn't get on with. I know, like, I know you, Rich, particularly liked it, but I found it slow and a little...
You misunderstood why it's a brilliant. That's fine. We're not going to have to
Yeah, we've discussed this before. I was probably in the wrong mood for it, but, like, I could have been in the wrong mood for this film too, so...
Yeah, there's similarities. I don't know if Drive was influenced by this, but the very opening was like, Christ, I started to think Drive was a remake, and then it diverges. I was like, oh, thank God, because I would have been disappointed, but yeah.
This film clearly had an influence on the film Drive.
Yeah, Walter Hill talked about it in some interview.
But, so it could have gone either way, because... I think it's the stoic thing. Like, it's really hard to do a stoic character. Like, you either get it right or you just get dull.
And also, on top of that, you got, you know, chase movies with cars can be a bit boring. Like, the 70s, they're better. Like, Bullet and stuff, there's loads of great... And, like, The French Connection, there's different kind of chase film. And, like, there's some really good 70s car chase movies, but... You know, it's a difficult genre to get the right amount of tension, excitement, and interest, because after a while you're just staring at cars driving and you're like, you know.
Yeah, I kind of got that from this, to be honest. That was what, like, there were less chases than I thought there were going to be.
Which, you know, because it's called The Driver, you know. Yeah. But then it would probably mercifully, because... There is a slight element of, is this interesting or a shade long? Is it in the directing or is it in the location? So we could get a little bit more into the chases and the car stuff later on, but that was like on people's minds, like, am I interested in a car chase movie?
Pretty much.
Abby, what about you? Are you a car buff? I know you can't drive, so I'm guessing probably not.
Well, I don't know. It seems a bit silly when you watch a film that, you know, it's about a driver to say that there were too many car chases. But I did find that I was fine at first, and then I just ran out of steam before the end.
Ran out of gas.
Yes!
But then, so we got competing opinions. There was some element of, oh, I thought there'd be more driving around in this, and now you're saying there was too much.
I feel like because of... In the first one, they did a lot of really interesting things, and they tried to keep doing interesting things, but you can only do so much with real-life locations.
What, you wanted to suddenly be driving along like a rainbow, like in Mario Kart or something? Like,
non-real
location?
No, but I'm just saying that the escalation didn't really work because you can't escalate just in normal places.
I see what you mean. Like, it kind of peaked. Like, the first car chase was the best.
Which
undervalued the rest of them going on.
Yeah, so, okay. one of the things that was playing on my mind before I watched it, because I watched it the first time for the podcast, was why don't I know more about this? And that's usually a sign that it isn't very good, because it's snuck under the radar. But it's sort of, it's got a cult following. It's not the biggest of all the cool 70s movies. And I think it's because it's, no pun intended, a little bit pedestrian as films goes. It's got nice twists. It's got car chases. It's got characters, you know, going after each other. A lot of tropes of crime thrillers. But, you know, not a whole lot more. It's a very basic film.
It's extremely simple, yes.
Apparently that was part of Walter Hill's intention with it, was to make... To see if he could make a film that was just stripped down to its absolute bare bones, just using genre cliches, and still make it engaging. Yeah.
Yeah, and I do think if that was the brief, it has somewhat succeeded. Like, it's not the best film ever, but I think you can strip away a lot of that stuff and still have a really entertaining film. I like the fact that we don't have named characters, we don't have backstory. We leap into it mid-career of a driver who drives for people who seemingly rob and rip people off and things. Like the opening, we set up a kind of casino. I don't know if it's a legit one or not, but there's lots of people playing various gambling card games. And then a woman is exiting slowly and boringly. And then eventually... A man who has stolen the car in an underground car park smashes through a fence needlessly and then turns up dramatically at an alleyway where the gambling joint is, waits presumably a few seconds while shit goes down. And then a couple of dudes in, masks or something, rob the casino with a few biffs and bops. You don't make a big, there's not a whole big hoo-ha about it, but a couple of dudes rip off the casino, get in the car. And we have the entertaining car chase. Go on, yeah.
The driver says that he won't work with people that have guns. I don't remember seeing a gun, but how the fuck did they rob a bank without using a gun? How did they rob a casino without using a gun?
He had a cosh. He coshed a guy.
Yeah.
There's definitely a fat security guard getting coshed. People don't expect you to rob a casino. They think you'd know better, so they don't.
Especially not in the 70s.
They don't arm themselves to the teeth. I don't know. Also, maybe if you get like a police raid, you don't want to have loads of guns because you don't. I don't know. You're right, Abby. I mean, it's very unreasonable for a man who drives getaway to be like, I don't work with people with guns. It's like, how else? We're going to rob them with bananas in our fucking pockets, are we, mate? Like, what do you want? We start the film off with just an example of what's to come, essentially. A tense, gripping chase, plays a few shadow games, there's a little bit of stoppy-starty, hide-from-the-cops business. There's quite a lot of police officers in cars chasing him. He has to do... He's a very... I don't know if it's Bond-like, but it was a very action movie, the way the guy would lead the cops on and get them to crash into deliberately set up ramps or curbs or whatever that would flip them dramatically and out of... They all crashed all the cops out of the game, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, and this was you know, a really strong start. It was what people kind of refer to as kind of like pure film. There's very, very little dialogue, if any, during the first kind of like scenes. I think like the detectives have a couple of words, but like the drivers don't share anything, and it's all down to like the editing and the cinematography and the filming. And it's really tense, and it's really good.
The driver himself does not talk for 15 fucking minutes.
Why is that a problem? You sound annoyed.
No, it's ballsy. I'm not annoyed, but I'm just saying, like, that is fucking ballsy.
It is.
There's nothing to talk about. What's he going to do? Get in and be like, I'm in my mum's car, brum, brum. Like, he's not going to say anything, because he has to drive the getaway vehicle, and, you know... I'll just park here, hide from the police, and be like, all right, guys, did you rob the casino, did you? Yeah, got the money in the bag. You know, there's nothing to say, is there?
Well, this is part of the idea of simplifying the film, or a film, as much as possible, that I think he was going for. In that way, it is... I didn't love it. I don't think it's entirely successful, but it is ahead of its time in a way. It's very much of a type of film that a lot of people wouldn't make until many years later. You see it more now with things like Drive, which is also similarly, you know, you have a main character who barely shows any emotion, barely speaks, very, very deliberately. Like, it's not because of a bad performance or a bad script. It's on purpose.
Yeah.
So considering that that was done in, what was this, 1978? Like, that is quite forward-thinking, considering the... And it's similar, and it comes up a lot in the film, to the sort of Western trope, the idea of a desperado or a... someone
cowboy?
Like Clint Eastwood's character. I don't like saying cowboy. It sounds stupid.
Yeah, but
like,
Bruce, that's what Bruce Dern calls the driver all the time.
Yeah, I know.
Cowboy in a slightly ass-hatted way.
Yeah, he does. He calls him cowboy. Calls him desperado. Like, it's, he's like a walking cliche of Clint Eastwood's man with no name or whatever. And you see it later on in, well, I keep bringing everything back to Mad Max, but in Road Warrior a few years later, like, Max barely has any dialogue.
The stoic rider character is something I think people find intriguing, because mystery breeds interest, doesn't it? You want to know about the mysterious guy, and that's the key to being interesting, is if you don't know anything about them, you can project whatever you like onto them, and that kind of makes them cooler and more interesting.
The problem is, you have to be very selective with who you cast. And Ryan O'Neill isn't the most charismatic lead in this.
No. I think
he's kind of too nondescript to the point where I just don't care.
Well, like, Walter Hill also did The Getaway, which Steve McQueen as like a getaway driver. And that one is a lot better and more engaging, I think. But
yeah,
Steve McQueen's naturally charismatic is one of the things there.
According to IMDb, I think he wanted Steve McQueen for this originally, and Steve McQueen said he was just fucking sick of being in car films. Yeah. Which, you know, fair enough. But, like, again, I don't want to compare it directly to Drive too much, but you have a similar character with Ryan Gosling's character, but Ryan Gosling is such a funny-looking, weird guy that... like, his silence is more like, is this guy autistic? What's happening? And then fact that he does it, it's very similar in Only God Forgives as well. The fact that he very suddenly does really violent things, but is this sort of quiet, sad-faced, odd guy. You know, that's an example where it's intriguing. Or even in stuff like that, like, again, Road Warrior. In Mel Gibson, or the newer one with Tom Hardy, like, it's a wordless performance, but there's a lot of physicality to it that makes it interesting, or even an appearance. Whereas in The Driver, Ryan O'Neill is kind of he's like the player character in a video game where the player character doesn't speak, like GTA 3.
Yeah.
Where, you know,
I mean, I've projected a lot onto that man from GTA 3, so it works for him. I mean, he's got a slightly douchey haircut. But for me, what was wrong with Ryan O'Neill is once he does have some dialogue, it's just he comes across like a dickhead as well. So you got all the detective played by Bruce Dern is an arsehole, and he's even an arsehole to his own men, and it's almost... They're trying to build the film around this idea that we want the detective to fail and not catch this outlaw. And then when the driver has more to say, he just seems like he's a bit unreasonable and a knob, like, which is not what you want. You want him to be, you know, you want to root for him like you might Clint Eastwood when he's doing, you know, desperate stuff in the West, you know?
Yeah, like Clint Eastwood's another good example as well. He's engaging in the, like, Sergio Leone's Westerns in particular. A lot of it is on his appearance and the way he carries himself,
yeah,
not necessarily what he does. And that's kind of, it's something that's missing from this. I feel like this is stripped down to the point where it's almost artless. It's like, it's too simple. It's removed any kind of flair, which is also why the card chases, for the most part, don't really work. Like, that first one is a lot better than the ones that come after, because
it
seems...
It's very exciting. Like, it's got a little bit of, like, data... Like, you know, just the way that when you do practical stunts and hit... Like, there's a few other scenes where they hit barrels and boxes, and you go, oh, my God, it's like textbook stuntman stuff. It's like a hard-working stunt team, but realism goes out the window slightly because the car crashes and like, a lot of it is like, oh, my God, that's really cool, the way you've just... let the cars take the corner really quickly, and like, it's good stunt work, but at the same time it's either too ridiculous or like technically very dangerous but actually boring to watch cars turn around a corner. It's like, oh, to do that would be risky and you could crash, but to watch, it's just they took that corner fast.
Yeah, I
and
think
then,
you
know, like, you flipped a cop car and it's like, oh, well, it's that clunky old-fashioned stunt thing. But then
I've just thought of something that I want to mention, I don't want to forget. When those guys were trying to recruit him later and he was driving around in the parking lot, why did he smash up their car?
He's a prick.
It's like why the one character we're meant to maybe root for deliberately acts like a doofus and a dickhead. My interpretation is this. So there's a big orange, like, Mercedes or whatever it is, and two of the speculative... It's a little bit weird, but essentially there's a team of bank robbers who are being forced to take on the driver by the detective. Like, Bruce Dern has caught one of the bank robbers. And, I mean, we'll talk about the impossibly ridiculous deal he offers, but essentially they have to hire the driver because that's who Bruce Dern wants to catch, because it's like a badge of honor for him. And so in an audition to be the driver for this bank heist, he... is, like, you know, given the wheel of an orange car, a big orange car. And I think he's demonstrating that he's not that interested in it. But, like, he shows off he's a good driver. And also he's kind of protesting and being like, I'm not that interested in this. So I guess he drives around the car park and hits every pillar and post, knocks off all the bits of the car, like the wing mirrors, the bumpers.
Yeah.
He drives really, like, well and badly, like, around the car.
Yeah,
park.
The
way I read it was, it's a kind of badly that's good, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's showing that even when he knows how to handle a car so much, he knows how to crash it properly without anyone being
really
injured, kind of thing.
Precisely.
Yeah.
If we come into a big, you know, violent situation where we're going to have crashes and close calls, I will maintain cool and calm under pressure and continue to maneuver the car, and I'm aware of what a car can take damage-wise. So, yeah, it's sort of establishing some technicalities. And then I think the idea is he's shitting up the robbers because they're like, this guy's a maniac, why is he driving like this?
Especially when he opened up the driver's door just to smash it into a pillar.
See,
that
I thought that
was
hilarious.
Level of,
yeah, that was good.
That was beyond dick.
It's so petty.
Just when you think the bishing and bashing is over, I'm just going to smash this door off for no reason.
There might have been an element of, well, you've turned up in a, like, bright orange car that anyone is going to notice. Like, get rid of it.
Well, oh, yeah, so he's this one.
Yeah, it's making it... so that car has to be disposed of, yes.
I mean, it's a good... And this is one of the things that the film does do well, is that it does a good job of establishing characters without really having to have them explain things or be built up beyond what you see. It does do, for the most part, a lot of good just wordless storytelling, just visual storytelling.
Yeah, we got a lot out of that from... I mean, Abby, you were a bit confused by it, but we've all interpreted a lot of things there. And that's good. That, you know, it's slightly ambiguous why, but we gather a lot of information about how they all feel about each other while watching a man crash a car in a ridiculous way. So I think that's a definite tick in the plus column, that element of it. The fact that Bruce Dern, like, we established that, you know, this cowboy driver guy has been working a while, and that Bruce Dern is aware of him, and there's even a chance to catch him for the first robbery, which we can talk about, because that ties into a lady character, and the woman who was in the casino at the start. But we have Bruce Dern particularly wanting to get this guy, and therefore, when he catches some other bank robbers, you think a guy detective would be pleased? I've caught some robbers. That's good. No, I don't care about this hexagon glasses wearing baldy long haired freak. I want sexy driver cowboy man. And so, the deal he offers this bank robber is, I'm going to set you up with another robbery. If you're going to rob this bank, like, I, a cop, I'm going to let a robber rob a bank, and we won't catch you, but we want you to use the driver so we can catch him. Please turn up at the point we agree on so we can take the money back, or let you have the money. I don't know. Like, you won't go to prison if you rob a bank, is basically the deal.
Yeah, it's offering a level of immunity if they help him catch this one guy, but like, he wants to catch this elaborate setup.
Is it necessary, though? Like,
I think the idea he says later on when he's talking to his partner that it's a game. Like, that's what he establishes. He doesn't. It's almost like he has to set up a board in order to play. He can't just do it simply because there's no fun in that. There's no challenge. He doesn't just have to catch the driver. He has to win.
But this is a bit of a hypocrisy from him, I think. He talks a lot about winners, and it makes sports analogies, which is kind of a waste of time. But he sort of suggests that, yeah, it is this game to win, and he's the cat and this guy's the mouse, and he's been in the game really long, and he's going to beat him. But then he's willing to, like, when he confronts the driver in one scene, he says, I'm fucking on to you, mate. And he pours coffee on him so that if the driver punches him, he could put him away for, like, assaulting a police officer. And it's like, how is that winning? If you scald the man's hand so he punches you, it's not you catching him in the act, is it?
Well, he's also another dickhead. Which is, like Abby said, no one in this film is particularly likable, which I kind of enjoy. It's one of those odd things that I have when a film sort of challenges me to side with someone when none of them are particularly likable.
You just like your own, Jamie, that's it, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Drawn to them. But that's why you can't root for him, is he's this fucking insufferable. He's willing to sort of cheat and move the goalposts to get what he wants.
Yeah.
And he goads the guy, and there's like, his other men are sort of questioning how responsible it is to set up, like, robberies in order to catch a guy. You're basically, you know, entrapping the guy, essentially. And, you know, when does this obsession end? Like, is there any need? You know, he's not even that high profile a criminal. He's a getaway driver, not a fucking mass murderer, you know? Like, so. And you caught a robber. Just, that's good. Done. Like, just seems odd. And I don't know, I wasn't buying how elaborate it was and how trusting it was of Bruce Dern to not have, like, police watching the building, or, like, I couldn't believe the bank robber was going to go with it. He didn't really have a choice. He was going to prison or do the robbery. But it was like, you've set up this bank robbery, I haven't having to do any work, and then I get a bag load of money, and you want me to bring it to a certain place so that I don't go to jail, and I don't get any money, and, like, do you know what I mean? It's like, it was, of course the guy's going to rip you off, you know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it's all part of the characterization of Bruce Dern's cop, is that he talks a lot about all of this stuff, but it's all kind of disingenuous. Like, he talks about it being a game, but he's also effectively rigging the game in order to guarantee himself a win.
And it's weird, because he's sort of half-bragging to the driver and his colleagues, and they think he's a bit of a dickhead, and he calls them assholes and says they're dickheads and shit as well. And it's like, it's just like he's like a petulant child, isn't he? Like, not getting his way, but trying to act all cool, like he's the hot shit, or like some clever, like, he calls himself a winner and things. It's just like, you couldn't be more of a loser, mate. your curly hair, drinking your glass Coca-Cola and bragging about how good you are as a detective. Ugh. Have some humble pie, mate.
Well, that's what makes it satisfying at the end when he has to walk away.
Yeah.
Because it's the fact that he and the driver have been had by someone who has not been in the film, really. Someone just swoops in and fucks it all up, and then they both just walk away.
Yeah, I suppose we should talk a little bit about some of the female characters, because there are... There's two, but they're crucially... One is a handler. Like, it's a woman who... I never understand, right? In the crime world, they have hitmen and robbers and things have handlers who take, presumably, a cut. It's a bit like an agent who... A go-between, someone who finds... I don't know how... Do they have, like, a little booklet with loads of names of people who commit crimes, and they go to them and go, would you like to do a murder for the mafia for this much? Like, I don't really understand. How does one become a handler?
I don't know. It's like whenever I see gambling in a film or a TV show, because I don't understand how it works, I just assume that it's correct.
Yeah, just...
Or like playing cards. Yeah, all right.
But is it like a job, like where you work your way? You have to start off as a robber, then an assassin, and then if you graduate and are good enough, you move up to managerial positions where you train other assassins, and then you fold up and go, I've got a job. And then, like, I get the idea, you're not meant to, people, if people don't know each other, they can't, like, rat each other out and stuff, so it stops that, and it's more independent and neutral and stuff. But I just, there's a woman handler, and she's just kind of there to be murdered to add tension, I suppose.
Yeah, that scene was good in how tense it was, especially when he shoves the gun in her mouth. That was really uncomfortable. But also, and I was surprised that he just kills her, but I also then realised I didn't really know who that character was. Like,
you mean the woman or the guy doing the killing?
The woman. I knew who he was, but...
Asshat. Untrustworthy ethnic type that you totally on board with the driver. I don't trust him. He likes guns and it has long hair.
I thought it was the younger female character. So I was shocked, and then the next scene she's there, and I'm like, oh wait, I've lost something here. Well, this is the point in the film where I did kind of tune out, because the plot that Bruce Dern was trying to have play out, and then these sort of drivers, having this... a rivalry that leads to the car chase in a warehouse, and that, like, I'd kind of, and the briefcase exchange on a train, I'd sort of gotten lost in what was happening, because it's like it was so simple that I got confused, because I kept thinking there's more to this that I'm missing.
I know what you mean. When there wasn't some sort of, like, surprise twist at the end where it's like, ah, but we pulled a switcheroo and actually the case is in our possession all along. It was a bit like, oh, okay, that's just the end now. Like,
I feel like, because again, from IMDb, apparently there was the original cut of this that was never released was over 2 hours long. And I feel like that would have made it interminable, because it already feels long at an hour and a half. But I do feel like there's maybe some possibly essential actual story in that 2 hours that would make things flow a little bit better.
I don't know. I think it might be just not paying attention, because I'm usually the one who gets lost and thinks aunties are uncles and brothers and sisters and ups are downs. You know, like, I easily get confused. I'm cutting out all the names and bumps made it just easier for me. I was like, I get it. No details.
I mean, that's fine. No. I like that. I like it when films just give characters their names are just what they do in the film. But, like...
Look, you're tough, but he didn't pay enough attention. Abby, how did you get on? Were you following this? You weren't feeling great when you watched the film, so it might have not have helped. But
yes, I have a slightly different issue.
I can't talk properly.
I think I have a sinus infection, which means my concentration is poor. So there were moments in this film where I suddenly realised I haven't been paying attention. What's happening? Shit.
Did you confuse the two women characters? Did you know who they were and what they were doing?
I did not confuse the two women characters. The only bit I'm definitely missing is the guy, the middleman who took the money, the exchange guy.
Yeah.
I don't remember who hired him, what he knew. I didn't know if I should be sad when he died. I was just like,
Here's what you need to know. You don't know any of that stuff. The exchange guy. So I think what happens is the driver works with this woman who finds him jobs. He's very picky, but he's very talented, so he gets to choose his jobs and be all like fussy when people are like a few minutes late or whatever. And so she finds him jobs. But once she's murdered, I guess there's a little bit more... There's less security. She's not, you know... I guess she has a managerial role, which means you don't get people ripping off because she can, like... I don't know if she phones the criminal hotline and goes, we've been ripped off. Someone who is an organized crime, kill that man and bring the money back. You know, like, I don't know what a manager of criminals does. But I think once she's dead... It becomes, the driver has to then find someone to make, like, launder the money, essentially. So maybe he has to get a less trustworthy person, or the person thinks he can get away with it now that there's, like, some dead woman not involved or something.
It speaks to the bigger idea behind this, is that in their world is actually very small, and there's more going on outside of it, which is how... the ending happens, the actual money, the meaningless plot point of the film for us gets taken away out of the film and they're left with nothing because Bruce Dern's hung up on this game that he's playing in his head with the driver.
So essentially there isn't any meaning or purpose to this guy. You can't feel anything other than, a man is dead, but then he was potentially ripping them off. You don't know that, I guess. But yeah, like a long-haired, beardy chap does get a dramatic murder through a window of a train. Like, there's quite a nice bit on the train where Bruce, let's rewind back. I'll cover the basics, because there's really not much to pull apart, even though you guys are kind of sleeping through elements of it for whatever reason. It's pretty simple. There was one robbery at the start. It went wrong in that the driver was ID'd by this woman coming out of a casino. And Bruce Dern is a detective investigating it. And he knows it's the driver because it's his MO. He's just on to him. There are the clues that sort of suggest that it was him. And so he has his witness, but this woman is like, no, it wasn't him. What? And then it turns out, like, the driver finds out because he doesn't know why she doesn't just tell the cops who it was. And essentially, she had a sugar daddy that is no longer interested in her. It's like this young, attractive woman, dark hair, likes wearing a big hat. And she lives in a guy's apartment. And is it that she fucks him a couple of times a month so she can live there? Is that the idea?
Yes. Yes.
So there's a woman on layaway for some rich guy, and that's not going to happen in future. So she sort of thinks, if I don't... Like, she sort of makes the assumption that I can maybe get some money out of this from the criminals if I don't dob them into the police. Maybe they'll pay me something. That's right, isn't it?
I don't know if it's implied that she kind of uses her own initiative there, or whether she's kind of like bought out... off-screen beforehand.
There's a scene where she's going to receive some payoff money and she's a bit surprised that it's the driver himself. I guess he turns up because he's a horn dog or something. He's like, oh, a sexy lady, I want to know more. So yeah, she seems like she was expecting someone else to deliver the money. So maybe there was a pre-arrangement off-screen, like you say. But, this gets this woman involved with the driver and that she sort of is working with him a bit in the, in a later heist. And that's the important one. The second big heist is Bruce Dern has caught a robber. The robber is being forced to take on the driver, and he sort of auditions him with that orange car crash. And like, because the two robbers they have, there's a hexagon glasses wearer and the sort of shooty McMexican guy. I don't know if he is Mexican. He's just like long-haired guy with a mustache. And they have a blonde-haired, slightly crap driver.
With insanely big hair. Like, he's the most 70s-looking kid in
the
film.
He does look 70s. So he's like, he looks like he should be in like a skateboard park or something, doesn't he?
It looks like he was in hair.
He does, yeah. Yeah, so they are going to hire, because they have to, the driver. And the driver's a dick, and he doesn't want to. He doesn't trust these guys. He acts like an asshole at every turn. And is very suspicious. He basically bullies the long-haired, moustached guy out of it. He's like, you don't fucking go with me. You're not going with me. Fucking turn up at my house with a gun, and I'll easily batter you and throw you down some stairs or whatever he does. Like, so he takes a dislike to that guy. And then he does the driving, you know? And then that goes wrong, I guess, because glasses guy takes the money and runs.
There was one thing I liked about that, though. It was, there was the edit between him essentially accepting the job and then the job happening. It was pretty much instantaneous. And it kind of, like, threw me off a little bit. And, I at first it was like I didn't quite like it, but then I did, because you realise it. What it's done is just cut out the bump. You can just assume from what's happened from all other kind of like heist films you've seen, and it's like, no, okay, I kind of like that. It's moved it on. It has really cut down the junk.
I appreciate the way, like, how brisk the film is at certain points and how it gets to the point very quickly. The only problem is I feel like there are scenes in between that would have also benefited from that. I almost feel like it's maybe out of that much longer cut, the wrong parts got cut out. And there are certain scenes that could be cut in the same way in things jumping from one thing to the next.
Maybe you could have a longer film about the career of a driver, because this guy can go on to do more driving and did more driving before this. So maybe it could be more of like the memoirs of a driver, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I also, that's the other thing I do like about it, is that it drops you in and then out. Like, yeah. It's not a film that necessarily has a defined beginning, middle, and end arc for any, like, that particular character. It's just, it feels very much like an episode in his life, and that he's done other things like this.
Like, at some point before, he got into country music that he plays.
Oh, yeah.
Himself. Like, he's the fucking Baby Driver or something.
I mean, that's another one. Edgar Wright talked about it in some interview about this film being an influence on on Baby Driver. That's really the thing with, you know, watching, when I was watching this film, I didn't necessarily completely engage with it. I did find it kind of dull in places when it shouldn't have been, because it has a lot of things that I like in films like this, and it approaches it in a way that I do like, in that, you know, simplifying it and sort of playing around with the idea of just using cliches on purpose to build a film out of them. But more than anything else, it was interesting to see the influence that a film
it's
like
had on other stuff.
Yeah, because it did very clearly. I can see video games and subsequent movies in this film.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to cut it short. I agree with you, but I think there was enough throughout that kept me like pleased, and there's scenes I liked. I guess there's enough in it to influence people, but not enough to make a whole engaging thing. But like, I like the fact that the driver is not that interested, and he probably smells a bit of a rat about the whole situation. It's a bit suspicious that this guy, like, he crashes around in an orange car that should put the robbers off him, and yet they're pressing that, oh, I still want you, and so but he's not doing the job. And then Bruce Dern is like told that it's not going to happen, mate, by one of the robbers. And then he's all like, I'll just save your ass, shall I? And essentially all Bruce Dern has to go is be an arsehole at the drive and be like, ooh, I got your special key that you steal cars with. I bet you want to drive, don't you? And then that's like, oh, well, if you're going to be a dick about it, yeah, I'll fucking do the robbery and flick you the V's as I drive away with all the money then. You know, like, that's all implied, you know, when the driver accepts that he's going to do the robbery. And I enjoy a lot of it is down to you interpreting what the body language and interactions...
Yeah, I mean, I like that it doesn't go out of its way to unload exposition on you about what's happening. You're just sort of there as an observer, and then you get what you can read out of situations and the way characters sort of interact, even wordlessly with each other.
So I suppose the important thing to discuss involving the ending, because it gets a bit more Hollywood and exciting, and you're expecting an Ocean's 11 style switcheroo twist, and you know there's elements of twist, but fundamentally it comes down to the robbery goes not quite as expected. The glasses guy has the surfer dude has to be in on the robbery because the driver's decided that the main other robber can't do it because I said, and. So, surfer dude, hair guy, he goes on the robbery, and he's not as good, he trips an alarm, and that pisses off Glasses, and Glasses just shoots him in the bank, fucks off with all the money. I guess because in his mind, he's like, it was shocking, because it's like, you're fucking this up, you're obviously not planning to do the deal with Bruce Dern then, because you've just murdered a guy, you're not going to get the deal, but so... he's obviously planning to kill the driver. The guy's kind of wound him up anyway, so he's like, I'll just fucking kill you, and me and my buddy will split the money as planned. So, but, you know, it comes down to Hollywood-style gloating, where it's like, you fucking dickhead, you never take a gun with you, and then he instantly gets shot. What do you guys make of that as, like, a little twist fuck you bit from the driver?
I did like it, because it was... somewhat unexpected. It kind of caught me off guard.
I like that that's the way death is presented in this film. It's always sudden and then it's done. There's very little build up and then there's very little fanfare when somebody is killed. It's just sort of a flat sounding gunshot and then the person just hits the floor and that's it.
They're not in the film no more.
Yeah. And just... when it happened, when he shot him, it was a surprise, but then it was also kind of like, of course he had a gun, because he's been so meticulous all the way through.
He had to have had a plan.
Yeah, exactly. So it was both a surprise and yet, of course.
Is the idea then...
which is a nice moment.
Is the idea with this dude that he's affecting the fact that he doesn't like guns so that he could have a gun and surprise people? Like, he goes about being all snooty so that he could be surprising.
I think it's a last resort thing, and it's like a personal code of honor, I think. That's how I interpreted it anyway. Like, he will use it if he absolutely has to.
Or maybe he just brought it along to this one because he knew something was up.
Yeah, he definitely didn't trust people. I think there's a he's smarter than them thing going on. Like, it's implied that he's cleverer than people expect. But essentially, he gets... This is where the big bag of money comes in and it becomes a bit more Hollywood. But so there's a bag of money that's robbed from the bank. Bruce Dern and his detectives are like, oh, they're not turning up, but the arrangement. And essentially, Driver Boy... gets to keep the money, steals the car, the big red truck thing of the dude at the meeting point that he's just killed, and fucks off and kind of isn't... I guess he knows he's in danger from potentially the guy's friend who had the gun. And, the cops are going to be after him pretty hard. Like, he's a wanted man majorly now. Like, so there's a little bit of tentative what should I do this, but I think a woman comes along. Is it the woman from the gambling place? Does she say to him, like, you'd happily post the money back to him, wouldn't you? And I think that is true. I think he's almost doing it just to fuck off Bruce Dern. Like, he happily doesn't even care about the money, just fucking... it's about showing up the detective, you know. What did you guys make? Abby, what did you think? Did you think that was implied. Did you like any of this, like, cat and mouse shit with a bag of money?
I didn't understand the logistics of the cat and mouse shit, but I did appreciate that he was just like, the end, where he's got the empty bag, he gives it to him. You did just get that sense of, the guy almost never smiled, but that was the closest he ever came to smiling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good ending. I mean, essentially, it comes down to the fact that we will talk about what happened to get there, but a locker is opened. The driver comes to pick up the laundered money that he has hopefully done a deal for. And then the police, a large line of police and Bruce Dern teleport in silently. Yeah. I thought that was, it was really weird. Why did they suddenly, like, everything's fairly realistic and gritty, and then it's like a moment of movie magic where everyone teleports in silently. Like, why did they choose to do that, you know? I did like it. It worked, but it was odd. It took you out of the film, I suppose. But, you know, the if he has a big bag of money, jail time, and I guess receiving an empty bag isn't a crime. It sort of links you to a crime, potentially. You had a locker key for a that was related to a
I mean, I think it's more of a if it Bruce Dern didn't catch him with what he had very deliberately wanted to catch him with, therefore fuck it, it's not worth it.
Yeah, you can't really put someone away for stealing nothing in particular. receiving a very cheap bag, yeah, a nice bag, yeah. And yeah, so there's the nice lose-lose. I don't get the money, you don't get the money, I don't go to jail, you don't catch the mouse thing.
I liked the... My favourite part of that was despondent Bruce Dern firstly trying to give the bag to someone else, because now it's this, it's this fucking anchor. And then when he walks away and he just drops it on the floor and keeps going.
Yeah. I found it a satisfying ending, and I kind of enjoyed the running around bullshit on the train. Like, so what essentially happens is the driver's got this woman friend who's a, sort of, they're buddying up together. Not exactly lovers or anything, but he needs someone else to, like, you know, help out, and she can take a cut and things. So she's been roped in to do a switch for some laundered money with mysterious long-haired beardy man. And that guy, they do the old tense, oh, swap the key, check the lockers. You know, basically it's two lockers, two keys. They switch them around. One goes in, one goes out. And the money from the money from the robbery goes with a greasy-haired guy on a train. The cops are watching. They get on the train, and then Bruce Dern has to rummage through people's luggage indignantly and tell people they're cunts for not looking at him the wrong way. There's a little bit of, you know, oh, is he going to catch him? Because there's the guy's on to him, isn't it? Like, and he swaps his case for a shitty brown one. And, like, I guess he's willing to abandon the money at one point, isn't he? Because he sort of realises the cops are on the train, so he just stuffs the money in, like, an overhead is belonging to someone else. Is that right?
Oh, he swapped bags with someone.
And he goes and hides in the toilet. So he gets his bag checked, and it's not like Bruce Dern kicks it back in because he's like, fucking hell, it's not the right one, and keeps looking. And then, yeah, so I guess he's accepted that he's not going to get the money, isn't it? The guy who is trying to steal laundered money.
He's stealing
the money from the robbery.
I guess because there's no kind of way he could go and get it back.
They must have just gone, I don't want to get caught with this money then.
Hmm.
So he's trying to break free in the toilet. Like, he, you know, gets away briefly with seeming like he's not the guy. And he's smashing the window in the toilet. And Bruce Dern and him have a kind of through-the-door gunfight, don't they? And Bruce Dern gets the upper hand, bursts in, shoots him, and he kind of falls awesomely out the window and out of the train. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's such a non-typical... It's not an action movie fall. He just sort of drops and flops on the ground.
It's like, I've been shot, and also, oh, fuck.
Ow.
Turns out I fit through this window rather neatly. And as quick as he turned up in the film, he's gone. That's it, dead.
Yeah.
So, you know, in a way it's good, because Bruce Dern has the money from the bank. He just, so the you know, technically there's been a rip-off of the driver, but, like, you know, importantly, Bruce Dern has the one consolation prize of having not lost however much money he set up a bank for being robbed. You know, like, they got that. You can keep that. That's in the bank. That's, well, it's not in the bank, but, you know, get my meaning. And then we go... There's, like, a whole car chase at the end, then, to sort of go in the middle of the finale where the reveal is that the other bag had nothing in it, which is pretty dumb. But then, in any other switcheroo, you'd feel you'd have to put, like, paper in the bag, wouldn't you? So it felt heavy. But in this one, the lockers mean you could put fuck all in it, and it's fine. But, like, we have the whole quite long car chase. Do you guys want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. This, like, I was okay with the movie all the way through. I didn't feel like it was dragging too much. I was just kind of like going along with its just kind of like effortlessly seeming coolness all the way through, and just enjoying the just like the 70s-ness of it all, like in the cinematography and just everything. But it was this last car chase that is where it started falling apart for me. I personally was going along with what was going on fairly well. There was a little confusion with some of like what was going on with the switching of the bags and.
Oh, you guys are idiots! It's really easy. They switch keys for the lockers, and then when the woman has got the locker for what should be the laundered money, the old bank robber who wasn't in on the robbery and is pissed off comes in, snatches the key because he's been watching them from, you know, secret position 12, and then he fucks off with the key so he can is the only one who can get the money from the locker. But he didn't run away quick enough because he runs out the station, and then, you know, the driver and the girl get in their car and chase after him. See, it's simple. He nicked the key that had the locker with the money.
That's fine. That's obvious. I mean, it's, you know, he stole a key and that's obvious. But the thing was, I didn't quite understand why there was switching of bags. I just always assumed there was nothing in the second bag. And it was just a decoy.
Why would you assume there's nothing in there?
It was just a decoy. Like, and they would go and pick up the money from the guy who took it from a different, more secure location later on. I don't, like, that's just what I assumed.
There'd be, like, a filmic reason why. Like, obviously it's empty because we have the real money in the real... Like, there'd be a clever reveal.
Yeah.
No, I see why you think that. That's the grammar of film.
Hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, I think they have to do the two lock. It's a very sensible way to switch money without two people passing bags and then instantly getting handcuffed. The key element does stop. If it's one step removed, it stops people tampering with things. I get it. I mean, it's a trust system. But then...
But at that point, because I felt like there was going to be a clever switch and twist at the end, I was fine with it. Like, so...
Well, why would the,
so
why
I
would,
was okay. I don't
why
know.
That's why
it's a clever twist at the end. If you
no, I,
you're not
I mean,
supposed
like,
to really understand what's going on until it's revealed at the end.
But I'm saying if you had a secret reveal where the money was going to be somewhere else, the driver wouldn't need to chase after the guy with the key, would he?
No. Just, like, so this is why it started to lose me, but not because of that. Just because this last car chase didn't really add anything new to the stakes. When they were driving around in the streets, it just felt like a lesser version of the first car chase. And then when they got into the warehouse, it just got a bit dull.
The huge, weirdly empty and open warehouse. Just a warehouse that keeps its like big car-sized doors open. It has no security or people working in there at night.
It's kind of like how every late 80s and then early 90s action film has to end in some kind of factory or refinery.
Yeah.
Every 70s film has a warehouse.
Yeah. It had the classic, let's pile up loads of boxes on bits of road we're going to drive on,
oh,
so we can
so
knock
many
over.
Times.
I will say, though, the car flip at the end of that chase, because there aren't really that many major stunts in the film, that one does stand out as just impressive because it's more than you've become used to at that point.
It's a nice brutal crash, isn't it? It's sort of, there's like a loading area that's sort of like a dip into the ground, like a sort of, I don't know what you call that, like a I guess it's like a pit where you could drive over and load things. And the guy, they have a game of chicken, don't they? Like, they, after a long outside chase, it's basically a big red truck, which looks a bit, it's a bit weird to have the leading guy, the cool, relatable anti-hero, to be driving a slightly lamer car than the one he's chasing. Like, saying that, yeah, the sort of grey sports car had sort of shit spray-on tattoos.
It's like, got tribal tattoos on it, yeah.
So the car of an asshat. But, you know, that it's a bit odd that the big truck was meant to be the cool chasing, I don't know. But, you know, they chase around for ages, they go around the warehouse, and there's a bit of quiet time where they lose each other between boxes of Xboxes or whatever. And they drive around slowly looking for each other, and then they're like, oh, I think we're safe, and they go for the exit. And, of course, like, the driver's like, I'll just park by the exit, innit? And then they have a game of chicken, which is a bit douchey, and that forces the guy into this weird pit thing and flips the car and whatnot. And I like that the driver lets this guy go once he gets the purse with the key back in. Like, the new driver,
yeah,
not gonna kill him. Like, doesn't he's not a prick about it. But he gets the guy that's a bit stolen from him and shoots him. So, you know, it's cathartic in a way. Exciting, if a little, you know, now by modern standards, a little bit of hack.
So I again, it's like the other deaths in the film. I like how deliberately anticlimactic it is. He just shoots him and that's it. There's no huge build-up. There's no real... There's a very quiet tension to it, but there's no drama.
Yeah, I think that's another thing in the plus. Like, I like the simple stuff. I think some of it is just suffering from being a little bit unbelievable. Like, the detective is quite ridiculous with what he expects to happen. And you can't have everyone be an arsehole. You have to have a cool anti-hero. You can't have a bit of a dickhead. You know, that doesn't do it for me. I need that special thing that makes you root for the guy. And I think that our driver was a bit, oh, just fuck off.
Mm.
Just like, then wash your hands with it. Move on to a new city or something, you know, like, don't get involved.
Yeah, there were quite a few moments in the whole film where people were just talking to each other or interacting with each other, and it just didn't ring true. Just like, this isn't how people interact.
Like, the driver, when he's working with the robbers, it's just a bit arsey for no reason. Like, if he doesn't trust them, just say as much. Like, he's not like clear with what his problem is. He's just all fucking huffy or whatever, and about it doesn't takes a dislike to them. And it's like, well, all right, you don't like them, don't work with them, but no need to be a big fucking tool about it. And just, yeah, everyone's a bit of a dickhead. So, you know, I feel bad for the detectives who are working with Bruce Dern, because they kind of know he's a bit of a dickhead, but he's their superior, so they kind of put up with him. And they drive around in a massive grey brick with, like, observation-based stuff inside. It's like a massive bread van, wasn't it? It was so big and tall and grey. Well, they do, like, I guess they needed to have them huge in the 70s to fit all the tech in.
Yes. It's not like our days where it all fits on a phone in your pocket.
The detectives drive around in phones, observing everything. But yeah, you know, the whole film is essentially a stalemate, because they get the key back, they go to the place, and then no one has the money. Oh, fuck. And it's like, oh, well, the whole film got a few people killed and got us nowhere, and a few cars crashed. But I liked it. I did like the ending. I enjoyed the journey, but I there was the niggling feeling of, could this be more engaging? Maybe. I don't know.
I understood the ending once it had finished and I reflected on it. Like, it made the ending made sense as part of the whole film. But for me, it was just a little bit of an anticlimax, and I just felt a bit hollow at the end.
Yeah, I can understand where if you thought there's going to be like another like 10 minutes of clever, I've thwarted you again and got the money, then yeah, I can understand being like, oh. But then the whole film has all the action moments are like, oh, he's dead. Oh, she's dead. Oh, that went wrong.
Mm.
Oh, he's been shot out the window of a train. Bummer. Abby, you obviously were, you know, partly ill while watching the film, and you haven't chirped up that much, but is there anything else you want to comment on or, you know, mention about how you felt about it?
I really do genuinely want to give them props for doing a lot of things that are technically excellent. Like, a lot of the way they managed to film the car chases and the car chases in them of themselves.
Proper stunt work as well.
Yeah. But it is just lacking sparkle. It's the only way I can think to put it is that it doesn't have that the ting. It's lacking the ting.
The X factor.
Mm.
Yeah, it's. I always feel a bit like people are giving actors too much credit for having charisma or have that it factor. But when you have Steve McQueen in a film by the same guy and it's just more engaging, you got to say, well, it must be down to whatever that actor is bringing to the screen. Because with this part, a more talented actor can breathe life into small moments, reactions and stuff. But I felt like it did fall a bit short in terms of likability from the antagonist. The antagonist and protagonist. So, I mean, any other thoughts from anyone else? Or are we going to have to try and think of metaphors or whatever?
I mean, I think I kind of summed it up earlier whenever I said about how in and of itself, I had a hard time really getting involved in it, but at the same time I see its significance in film, particularly in the crime or heist genre. I know Quentin Tarantino loves it, Edgar Wright, Nicholas Refn, there's obviously a lot of references to it in various video games, particularly things like GTA and stuff that have come since. And I see why it's important and what it did. And I also appreciate that someone like Walter Hill, even in the 70s, was already starting to mess around with the construction of a film like this, of making a genre film very specifically to make a genre film. It's a very cool film, but it's a little bit too disconnected for me, my problem, which is a shame because that's normally not the kind of thing I have a problem with.
I mean, it is. You can see its influence, but it's not as important as the things that it influenced in some ways. It's important, but it's not as engaging. Like you said, you mentioned video games, and GTA in many of its forms, especially 3 and some of the earlier ones. It's it's the classic Grand Theft Auto. The man steals a car, does a robbery, and then drops it off at the scrapyard and literally picks it up with a hook, dumps it in the trash, and it's that happens in this film. That is part of many of the missions of Grand Theft Auto, and it's definitely left its mark in media. But when you go back and watch it, you are just I'll be better than this though.
I feel like someone who is a fan of, particularly of heist movies and stuff, would maybe get more out of this, or even cars, that something like that.
And it's genuinely more cool than some people make heist movies all the time, and they're often shit and hack, and it deals in cliches, but it is cool. Nameless characters, just it doesn't have stupid contrived setups where you find out who Jason Statham is and why he wants to rob a bank and who his sexy girlfriend is. All of the people in this are just in it because they're involved in what's happening.
Yeah.
You don't need to know who they are or why they're doing anything. It's all just the basics. And that is interesting. Even if, maybe the reason they put characters and story arcs in films is so you can get engaged. I do appreciate what it's going
well,
for.
The existence of the film and the intent of it, I feel is more interesting than the end product ends up being.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. But as anyway, Anthony, yourself, have you got any more thoughts?
I have a metaphor for this film. It's the cool kid.
Me. I'm the cool kid in my school.
Sure.
No, go on, yeah. Sure.
it's the cool kid. Because this film is just, it's cool. You got a lot of stoic people kind of being calm and collected under stressful situations. and there's like cool tense car chases, and it looks slick. And it's got like you said, it's got that weird 70s fashion, which is kind of awful, but also kind of cool in its own kind of way.
You were saying pre-podcast it was like a particular piece of art, and then you were a bit dismayed because the trivia referenced that as an influence. But what is that painting? Because it is like you were talking about it, and it is like that artist, isn't it?
Yeah, the famous kind of like Nighthawks, it's called. It's that kind of American diner artwork by Edward Hopper. And just, it's, to me, it kind of had an influence on the general cinematography and the look and some of the locations used. But, like, then I read the trivia and it literally said that in there. So I was like, oh, well, I don't want to just look like I read the trivia. because this film definitely reminded me of stuff by Quentin Tarantino, the film Drive, the film Baby Driver, and then I looked at the trivia and like all of these things were mentioned. So it's like, and subsequently they've been mentioned in the podcast anyway, so yeah. I felt weird about bringing them up. But back to the metaphor, it's like the cool kid who effortlessly kind of like looks cool, but when you go to realize it, it's like they've actually gone to a lot of effort to make it look like they've not gone to a lot of effort. And really, there's something just a little bit hollow about the whole thing.
Style over substance. It's that thing of, a cool kid. They, you know, sunglasses, leather jacket, whatever makes them cool, being aloof, mysterious, having a reputation. But then when you look at them as a person, they have no depth, no character, and no... Like, they lack being a person, so they're just their reputation.
Exactly.
I think that's kind of like what you're driving at, isn't it? No offense.
I like that your idea of a cool kid in 2018 is still the Fonz.
Yeah. Shut up. Henry Winkler is the coolest man on earth, isn't he?
Mm. Well, that's just that classic kind of cool where you're, like you say, you're just that little bit aloof and not kind of caring about life. But then really, if you think about it, being aloof and not caring about life is really a little bit crap.
If you're a square like you, caring is cool. Am I right, guys? Having a personality and giving a shit about the environment, that's what's really cool. I think you're onto something, though. Like, I do agree with what you're saying.
But everyone loves the cool kid, if you know what I mean. So
yeah, definitely. And like, but you kind of grow up and you go, well, spitting on the floor isn't that rebellious. I mean, just a bit disgusting.
Yes, it's gross.
Not being able to keep time and turning up to lessons and things. Like, I mean, being tardy. You're so cool. Like, I don't know. Like, things stop matters. You don't need to be cool later. Like, it's not that you necessarily become lame, but you realise that a lot of the things that make you cool are kind of petty and make you also a bit of an arsehole.
Yeah.
And this film suffers from over-arseholage.
Indeed.
Anyone else got a metaphor or want to jump on Anthony's?
I have one that's different, but I kind of feel like watching this film is like being taken to a classic muscle car exhibition by someone who's really into cars and having to sort of feign interest the whole time. Sure. And like, I get it. Like, I understand that these cars are cool and I get what makes them that way, but I'm also not a car person, so I'm like, oh, well, yeah. And the guy's taking me here, we're there for fucking hours. Do you want to test drive it? Not really.
Yeah. I think that kind of links to my one. The metaphor I was going to say is it's, you know, you get your kind of, what's that horse named car? I can't even begin to talk about cars properly. the one that's like famously everyone loves a...
Mustang.
I couldn't think of that. Just like the song Mustang Sally.
Horse named car.
it's just the idea of if you get behind the wheel of a Mustang, an old fashioned 70s Mustang, there must be people, and they're fetishized. People love 70s cars. They love that particular type of thing. I think if you got in the car, you 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 know, you'd have the horsepower, you'd have the 70s look, and it'd be a cool factor. But there'd be an element of you wanting it to be a bit of a comfier ride or plusher.
Yeah.
Or
you're like,
just having
some
of the modern improvements.
Yeah.
Like,
this is cars actually quite hard and comfortable.
Yeah, and also, like, in terms of performance cars, they've moved on from the 70s as well. You know, there are better muscle cars now than then, but there's that vintage classic thing that is lusted after and loved by so many cult directors. And I think that's, for me, it's like, yeah, this is good and all, but I'll have a more modern one, please.
Yeah, like, I get it, but I don't care. I want to be able to Bluetooth my phone to the radio so I can listen to, you know...
Yeah, and I think
podcasts.
And but then I'm happy to be seen in the car as well. I'm not like,
yeah,
no. Like it is cool, unequivocally, definitely cool. But you know, it's got that, you know, I got that modern
clunkiness to it.
Yeah, it's got a few problems for its age as well. You know, so that's what I was gonna say, and I think that links to what you're saying about going to a car show. You know, I guess that leaves you, Abby. Have you had any metaphor inspiration?
It's sort of a variation on the theme of what you've talked about already, but I think it's more when you're having a midlife crisis and you've purchased any of the midlife crisis items, and for the first couple of days it's really good, and then you start to realize it's like, I spend a lot of money on this, and it's mildly inconvenient now.
I've got my motorcycle and I'm wearing the leathers, but I don't like how I squeak when I walk when I'm wearing the leathers.
I'm very sweaty.
My crotch is a bit tired from driving the motorbike.
My crotch is tired.
Yeah, just generally. It's the impracticalness of the things. It's, being Jeremy Clarkson is a bit of a hard work.
Yeah, oh my god, is that what this film is?
Mm-hmm.
Shitty was this cool.
That's true.
It's the exact crossover day where you still know that it's like, oh, it is cool and I do like it, but it's also like, well, I suppose for you guys it would be that slight ache in the balls of just, is this worth it? I mean, it's cool, but is it worth the slight ache in the balls?
I enjoy like, it's all well and good wearing the cowboy boots, but I enjoy taking off the cowboy boots much more.
Oh,
let my feet breathe.
This horse named car is playing hell on my balls.
That's gotta be a film, isn't it? This horse named car. Oh dear. That's good. Initially I thought I was gonna have to go with a metaphor like, it is a golf driver. It is the driver from the golf set.
Oh,
I am not equipped to make golf metaphors, just as I'm not equipped to make car metaphors.
What classic car is it? It's the horse-named one.
No, not a Ferrari. That's just got the Lloyds Bank logo on it for some reason.
Or the Chrysler one with a really weird, overly colourful logo.
Well, I don't want to drive the horse car. I want to drive the cat car. You know, the pouncing cat car. That's the one I want. It's Jaguar, is it? Or a Porsche isn't a cat. I don't know what I'd call.
Fuck.
No. Yeah, I think we've come to the conclusion, though. It's going in my collection of, aren't the 70s best? I'm just going to delete. I'm going to delete and burn all my other films. If it's not from the 70s, no thanks. Nothing. The decade, like, the 1980s was like, we get pop music. The 1970s was, we get, you know, films. Like, don't need any other decade, do you guys? It's the best. No matter, even if we didn't fully enjoy it, it's still the best.
It was a very solid decade for all kinds of different films from all kinds of different genres.
Not so great for, you know, the genders and races and sex.
I mean, yeah, we're not talking about anything not film related.
Yeah.
If you were a white guy in the 70s, it was great. You could drive a cool car, hit women, say more racist terms. There's no social media to lynch you if you did anything wrong. Better times. I'm going to live in the 70s. I don't care what you guys do. Maybe you can do a podcast next week, but for now we're done. Brum, 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 etc. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm going to get in my horse car. Drive off the cliff. For fuck's sake. Horse car, what a cunt. Just Mustang. So easy to remember. Like, fuck's sake. Anyway, bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
What are you, some kind of fruiter? Who even knew that was a term?